Siddhartha, it is a pleasure to sit down with you again, or across from you virtually. Only Murders in the Building, this show is such a huge, spectacular hit. Last time we talked to you a couple years ago, we were talking so much about This Is Us, which is its own hit, but you were secretly, I assume, working. This is the very start of the pandemic. Secretly working on this little show, Only Murders in the Building.
Listened. I went back and listened to our original podcast, which is 2020.
Yeah, and May 2020.
Wondered, Sid, first question is, when did you start working on Murders in this Building? Were you secretly working on it while we were asking you about other things that you couldn't talk about?
So when did we meet in our last podcast?
May of 2020.
Yeah, I was. I had not been offered the job, I think, at that point. But at the start of the pandemic, I started writing my own instrumental classical record, and I say that, you know, I know that sounds pretentious, but it really isn't, because I have very little. I don't have a classical background in music, and so for me, so much of my, you know, like something that I've always been slightly sort of like unsure of with myself and my own music is, am I capable of writing an orchestral score? And I come from the band world, and you know, so much of my experience was just writing songs. And whenever I did use orchestras, I would have orchestras on my band and I would write out those parts for orchestra. But it was, you know, in terms of score, I was always hired to sort of like make my own sounds, and like on This Is Us, I record everything here at home. And, you know, with the exception of cellos. And so I sort of took that time in the pandemic when all production started sort of like taking a pause, because a lot of productions, everything stopped for a period, to sort of like write what I felt was my own version of an instrumental classical record, a modern classical record. So like influences like Philip Glass, for example, played a big part of my thinking. And then older composers like Erik Satie sort of just like, sort of got into my head a little bit. And so I started writing. And then around that time I was writing, I received a call to meet on Only Murders in the Building. And Dan Fogelman, who's one of the producers, who's the creator of This Is Us, is one of the producers of Only Murders as well. And so Fogelman said, I want you to meet John Hoffman, the showrunner, and see if you guys connect. And on that call with John Hoffman, I sort of like played him a couple of pieces that I had been working on. And I'm not a great piano player, but I can write for piano. I can kind of write the themes and the parts as much as I can, which is, you know. And so for me, I sort of did some like half-assed sort of performance for them on Zoom. And
you literally went to a piano on the Zoom and performed?
Yeah, I was like, this is just some stuff I'm writing right now. And he was just like, can you send me that? Can I hear it? And then listen to it after. And he was just like, that's really not, he's like, that's already our show. And actually one of those pieces.
Did it go like this?
Not that one. It was another one. It was another one called Vantage. And that's actually one that, our friend Carol here, who's an incredible pianist who plays on our score. What a nice sort of meeting of all of our
chances of that.
Yeah. Can I set this up a little bit? Because one of the really interesting things about Score the Podcast and Carol, composer Carol, as she's known by our audio and video listeners sometimes, is she will play the themes of a lot of the composers that we interview. And so it might just be an Instagram thing or, you know, whatever, but they're really beautiful and fun. And a lot of the composers will go in and say, oh man, that's a really, like, I really enjoyed seeing you play. And like, who wouldn't? If you write a great theme and someone appreciates it and plays it, that's always a ton of fun.
That's literally what happened with me and Sid.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Can you walk us through how Carol ended up playing a little, you know, some of the piano on season two?
So, after our very first meeting here, You guys posted what the our score of the podcast interview, and then one of the things I found that I was tagged on was Carol had posted herself playing Jack's theme, and from This Is Us, and I heard it and I was just like, and I watched it and I was like, who is this? I was like, this is crazy. This is so, it was so beautifully performed, and it was just like interpreted in this like outside the box way. It was this very classical version of like of Jack's theme on a score that has that what Carol played, you know, as a sonic sort of idea would never have been on This Is Us, because it was a very classical approach. It was a whole other thing. But I really appreciated how she was able to sort of, how good she was as a pianist, and then how she was able to sort of like interpret a theme and a melody in her own sort of way. And I thought that, and I had Carol in my sort of mental Rolodex. And, and then when Only Murders came along, I had been writing these pieces, and I spent 2 months writing this piece called Vantage. And it's something that you should actually, if you have it there, you have the soundtrack, Robert, or you should get, I should get you the soundtrack. We should get it to you. But listen,
I've been listening. I don't know if I look at titles, but now I will.
Yeah. Listen to a piece called Vantage. I think Carol ended up playing on a version of it in season two. Mm-hmm. But we should play that piece at some point so you can hear sort of where it ended up. But anyway, as I was writing these pieces, John and company were just like, this is awesome. There was this piece Vantage, and he's like, this is my emotional theme. You know, da 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 da, what's the melody? Da 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 da. Da 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 da. Da 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 da. La da 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 da. That was this main sort of melody, and I had these changes.
It's so beautiful,
it's so good.
Thank you. I had these little changes on piano I was playing, and John was like, "That's, can you just go and finish that? Because that's, I love that." And so that's when I called Carol, and I was like, "Carol, I've spent 2 months writing this piece, and it was like it's much longer." But every day I would write a couple measures in the pen. This was like right around the time I was reading the script, and also like the, you know, around it all overlapped. The script came to me. I was writing this piece, and then finally after 2 months of writing it, I was like, I'm done. And I was like, I need to send this to Carol. In my head, it was always Carol. Oh, I was like, I need her to hear this, and I need her to play it, and I need her to interpret it, and I need her to add her sort of like, her wonderful classical sensibility to it. And Carol sort of brought it home. It was really beautiful.
I want to turn the tables now. Carol, briefly, we have to ask you a question about hearing from Sid. and then how this came about, because that's also pretty... You play a good amount of themes from a lot of the composers that have been on our podcast, but this is probably, you know, a little unusual, but also like pretty thrilling to be involved with. So what was that like?
100%. Yeah, it's been such an amazing opportunity, and very touched when Sid reached out. And even when he reposted my cover, I was blown away, because for me, it's just my musical style. Like, I never thought of it's an out of the box thing for him. And so when he told me that, he wasn't imagining like, oh, this chord is not something that I even like imagined when I wrote the theme. So that to me was really touching. And then months later, like Sid said, he called me and he said that, he, you know, he's working on a show that he wants to be kind of his score to be piano heavy. And then I was like, of course, you know. And I listened to Vantage, the demo Vantage, over the phone. And then I immediately, like, I had a connection. I was like, I know what I'm going to play. And then it also helped that he already had like the song structure, the cue structure done. So I was really just like doing my noodling things. And It turned out really great. And I never changed the first version. Like, he kept the first version of it. I remembered me sending my first version of it, and he was like, this is it. This is perfect. You're done. And I was like, wow, like, okay. And yeah, it's been really cool. And I am looking forward to whatever comes next. Maybe, I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, what
there will be more Carol.
Yeah.
And the other thing too with Carol is that, and Robert and I spoke about this at one point. I don't know, remember, it was on the phone or some of the time, but you know, there are certain players that add this sort of like magic when they play your pieces. And you know, and I play most of the piano on Only Murders, but I save the sort of complex, like, you know, the much richer pieces for Carol. But the but there is a sort of magic to her hands. I can't describe it. And it's like there's an emotionality that you play with that's really special, and I can't pinpoint what it is, but
I don't know.
One of the things I really love about this conversation, and it's sort of translates into why I love being a musician and talking to musicians, because there's a very special language that Sid, you hear in Carol's playing.
Yeah.
Something that's transcendent, that isn't just playing. And I don't know if everybody would be able to hear it, acknowledge it, in some ways even more remarkable, get mileage out of that skill. So I think there's something really magic here in that you heard it. I must confess, as I watch the show and I hear different things, I think, I wonder if that's her. Particularly when I didn't realize, you know, composers do such a magical thing. So you're scoring this show, and so much of it, first of all, if the show is good, I'm kind of paying attention to the score, but I'm also trying to figure out what's happening. First of all, there's a thing called the elevator theme, which I never realized was thematic. I'm just so used to junging, kijugi, that kind of chordal thing. I thought, oh, that's an interesting kind of, oh, wait, that's a thematic thing that's starting to come back in a really wild way. And as I start to listen to the score without picture, I want to come back to what you were saying about how you don't score, you don't have a classical, you didn't. A lot of it is really wonderfully orchestrated.
Thank you.
And it's, I would guess, if you hadn't said what you'd said earlier, and I sort of knew we talked about this a little bit, be like, well, this guy, in addition to all the other education, clearly, you know, did like 4 years at Juilliard or something, because here's these incredible different melodic lines and a very sensitive cue. Is that something that you got better at as you were writing your album and then they came after you? Did you, and two questions, did you get better at it so that when you started to write those cues, you knew? And secondly, just composeristically, do you write on paper when you write something like that, or do you do it in a box?
So, great question. So the elevator theme, that's me on piano.
Because that's the half step that kills me.
That's me on piano. It's quirky and weird. It's the kind of stuff that I'm capable of playing, you know, on my own. It's interesting. At one point, Carol, remember I sent that to you as well to play the elevator theme, and Carol crushed it. But we ended up always going back to my little demo of the chordal thing you're saying, because I play it in a way that no classical player would ever think to play it, right, Carol? It's like
Ashley struggled, I remember.
Yeah, it was like, it's this, like, it was
it's Thelonious Monk. It's percussive in a certain way. It's up and down.
Well, because I don't have my piano next to me. Oh, it's over there, but then I'm on my computer. It won't get us over there. Let me see if I could. I know this is just, I don't want to waste your time, but I've got this SK1. I've got this SK1. Nice.
Good.
And I'll just plug this in. It's not going to sound anything like what the show should sound like. Whoa. Okay.
That's not good.
That's okay.
Yeah, I was like. That, right? That's what you're talking about.
Yes, exactly right.
So it's like I'm playing, you know, a D minor chord in my left hand and a D minor chord in the right hand, just going back and forth between the two of them. And it's not something that like any piano player should probably ever do. But like, it's just the way that I should, yeah.
Rhythmically also. Which made me wonder a little bit about the theme, but I think the theme...
The triplets you're saying that are...
Yeah, do you think of the theme in four? This is...
Oh, yeah. Right, so that is I don't know how that even sounds. This shitty little SK-1 through there, but
SK-1 is a legendary instrument.
It is, but that's all. That's in four, but then there's the triplet.
Sid loves triplets.
Oh, I love triplets all day.
You do. I noticed that too.
But in terms of your other question, in terms of the orchestration. My first experience orchestrating anything was in my college a cappella group. You know, I would have to write parts for like 15 other people to play and sing. And then in my band world, sort of like, you know, on the records, I played pretty much everything except for like drums.
Really?
Yeah. And so a lot of what I did was layering oftentimes. So on this show too, like if you looked at like a Pro Tools session of when I'm writing something, you know, I have like 15 different tracks and I'm actually using, I don't know if you can see it right there. Let me see if we can. I use that a lot, my Mellotron right there. It's this digital Mellotron. And it's got just some great sounds in it. And you know, I can sort of create my own little mini orchestra out of some Mellotron flutes and Mellotron bass clarinets. And so then I can layer that stuff in. And so the parts sort of are there. And then it's just a matter of, charting it out for.
But you said cellos, you go outside?
You know, that's on This Is Us. I would go.
I'm sorry.
But on Only Murders, it's sort of, everything is sort of sitting. I'm using this Mellotron to score a lot of that stuff. So I'll start off with the, right, on the piano.
Yep.
And then there's like, there in the silent episode from last season, there is a, you know, you'll hear the flutes go, da, 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 da. Da, 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 da. And so I'm playing all that in on my Mellotron. And then those Pro Tools sessions ultimately get sent to our orchestrator and who's like officially a copyist who's officially, you know, writing that stuff as I played it in for a flute player for them to chart it out for a flute player.
How fabulous.
You touched on that silent episode, which is one of my favorite things in all of cinema, is when you can have, you know, because music is so rich in what it can communicate.
Yeah.
You need dialogue to tell a story most of the time.
Yeah.
But that episode, because we know the characters and we understand the mystery and the drama, can you talk us through how that that concept came about? Because I'm sure it's very exciting, but then it's probably 10 times the work for an episode like that also.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that the beauty of this show is on every level. It's really just an incredible collaboration. It's never just me. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is like, it is everybody. And I mean, not just me working with people like Carol or, you know, or the orchestra that's playing on the score. But it's also the editors, you know, on that show, particularly, I learned how to score that show because of Julie Monroe. She was the editor on our pilot. And when I, so if we go, let's go back a little bit, because it'll help answer that question better, of sort of like, of, let's go back in terms of, let's just go back in terms of how this sound even was created for the show, because I think that'll answer your question for the silent episode. I like to write early. I read a script, I hear something. And so when I read that script, I heard something. I played John Hoffman, the theme that you hear over the main title, right? And it was just... la, da, 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 da. Right? That was this little thing I played for him. And he was just like, that, Sid, is my whole show right there. And I said, what do you mean? And he goes, that melody, the phrasing of it, the fact that you are changing from major to minor underneath this, you know, underneath that same melody at that point, he goes, it's making me feel equal parts mysterious, lonely, dramatic, adventurous, funny. He goes, this is going to play into the magical realism that I am envisioning for the show. All of it. And so in that pilot, I had given variations of this theme before I ever saw a picture to Julie. And there's a
demo.
Just demos. There's just demos. And there are sort of, sorry, can you hold on 1 second, guys? I'm sorry.
Yes.
All right, this is the intermission.
Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We're hearing unbelievably wonderful music, which, if you are fans of Only Murders in This Building, you are intimately familiar not only with Sid's theme, but with Carol playing it, which is really fun.
I meant to ask this, but maybe while we're on a break here, Carol, I'm sure everyone has been asking you, what parts did you play? So, like, what's something that people can listen for either on a soundtrack or in the show?
Go watch season 2, episode 2.
Okay.
Yeah, I just watched that the other day, actually, and it sounded great.
Okay, sorry about that. Oh, Carol, did you hear those piano pieces in the back half of 2? In the back half of 2, I wanted you on Vantage, but you know, we figured we got you later on. But anyway, so when I
so you're talking about the editor,
right? And so I'd given Julie these sort of variations of my theme. There was a cello version, and we can talk about the bassoon. We should talk about all the pieces because they're very important. There was like a would happen on top of this sort of this cello line underneath. Julie said to me, she goes, Sid, every time this melody comes in, that is a realization that our characters are having. It's a step towards them solving the mystery. It's a light bulb. It's a light bulb for them. And that taught me how to score the show. So if you watch the first episode, the pilot, Mabel is, you know, she's having a very lonely moment. She's by herself in the bathroom, looking at herself in the mirror, and she hears the parrot through the vent, and she looks up and you hear like, oh, what is that? you know? And so that became the show. It was Julie, who was a seasoned editor. I mean, Oliver Stone's editor, did all these big films, and like is just a sage as well, taught me how to score the show. So when it came to that silent episode, we worked together in sort of, man, if you listen to where that melody comes in, it comes in every time there is a realization of something. It helps sell the story, especially with no dialogue there.
Did you agree with her interpretation? In other words, did you say, wow, I just wrote it out of a feeling, but now I see dramatically and narratively how you hear it? Was that a surprise to you?
Surprise to me. Originally, I did not understand it. Originally, I was like, I remember in my first episode, when I first saw some things come back, I was like, this is too heavy-handed. Like, we shouldn't be using this much score. There shouldn't be this much music. And she's like, no, Sid. She goes, the music is going to be a big part of telling the story of the show. Just hang in there with me on it. My inclination always is to pull back, to say, less score, the better. But she sort of, you know, when you commit to something, whatever it is, whether it's in music or whether it's anything else, you get the best results.
No kidding.
And so we committed to that theme, and it just became the thing. It was like, it's, you know, it's like Nicholas in Succession. Like, you know, you hear his every time, like you hear that theme come in. It happens multiple times in an episode. It is a thing. And I think that is our sort of thing here. We have our sort of like our Succession theme here in a way where it's like this gets woven in whenever it can. There's obviously other themes. There's the, you know, the Vantage theme that I sent you before, and others, and the Elevator theme. Obviously, there are variations. There's other things that we do. But on that silent episode particularly, look, there was no dialogue in it at all. It was just all sound design from our incredible Matt Waters, who is an incredible post-production sound designer. And we had that episode was told from the perspective of a deaf person. And so everything is what it sounded like from Theo's perspective. And they did a lot of research in terms of what that sounds like from the perspective of someone who's deaf. It's like these low rumbling noises.
This leads to the question of whether you spot it or whether Julie says, send me a whole library of feelings and I'm going to sprinkle them to where I think, or some kind of middle ground of that.
It depends on the editor. So, you know, we have three editors on the show each season. And so in that first season, Julie was an editor. Joanne is another editor. Julie likes to have a lot of music to play with. One thing she would do is she would call me and say, Sid, can you just send me a Vantage noodle? That's what she would call it. Noodle. And Carol, I think maybe even when I sent you some stuff, it was probably labeled Vantage Noodle. So it was just me on the piano playing it, and she would be on the phone with me, but not show me any picture, because she didn't want me to score too tightly to the picture. It was a balance. So you never want to be too on the nose. And so I would sometimes, I'd be, right? Right. So sometimes I would be like, she'd be on the phone. She's like, play it really slowly. And I'd be like, da, 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 da. Sorry, this is like this thing. Let me go to a different instrument. Let me go to the flute. Da. And she'd be like, no, slower. I'm like, okay. So I'd be like, you mean like, da, 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 da. She's like, yes, give me that for a minute. And so, and I would not know why she'd want it, but she knew why she wanted it, because she felt that she wanted to cut the scene to the pace of that cue. And she didn't have it in the canon yet. And she's like, I don't want to waste Sid's time and send him early picture that's going to change a million times. But if I can get him to give me that cue, that theme at this tempo, I know what I want to do with it. So she would do that. And then sometimes there was an editor like Joanne who would say, I have this scene early on, and the director would sign off on me seeing it early, because normally you're supposed to wait for a director to go through their cut first. But directors oftentimes would be like, let him see it. And I would globally see a picture. I'd see this picture. I would shut off the picture and then just write something and send it back to them, like a full like 3-minute piece of music. So it varied. But with Julie, there was a lot of sort of, she'd just call me and she's like, this is what's happening in this scene, Sid. I'm not going to show it to you.
That leads to a question that I had also about the way that the, you know, you were these little noodles, as you were talking about. You mentioned in another interview that for at least season one, and I'm guessing probably season two also, but that because that's not out, we won't talk about that. But you mentioned that there were kind of clues to the mystery that were embedded in the music that were there purposefully. And it wasn't just kind of the eureka, but maybe there was a little like suggestion that was actually there of something that you had embedded. And I don't know if that's like, if that's technically a Easter egg of some kind, but I did want to revisit with you on season one, some of those types of things that maybe you slipped in there.
Yeah. We can talk about season two too, because half of it's already released.
Okay.
So we can talk about them both and talk about the differences too, between the two. So in season one, when I was writing these early pieces, the original theme, thanks, Carol. I sent that piece to Anthony Parnther, who is one of the best bassoon players in the world, I would say. He's incredible. And I asked Anthony to play that for me on bassoon just play it for me on bassoon and send it back to me. And he did. And I was like, oh my gosh, I love this. And I sent that to producers in this early demo I had sent, with sort of the cellos going, underneath, and you hear with Anthony playing on bassoon. And the producers were mixed on it when I first sent it to them. Jamie Babbitt, our director, loved it. John loved it immediately. And a couple of the producers were unsure, and I never knew why they were unsure till later. And I think it's because I had our main theme being played on bassoon. And at the end of season one, you find out that our killer is the lead bassoonist in the orchestra. And that was accidental. I had no idea where the story was going at that point. It was so early. And so it ended up being this accidental Easter egg, but it ultimately made it in, and it's there. It's in the main theme. It's on the... it's everywhere. You can hear the bassoon everywhere. And it ended up being this very cool thing that when we find out that the killer is the bassoonist, the entire time I've been planting that clue for eight
episodes. Serendipity, weirdness. Does Anthony play the Amy Ryan bassoon solo?
Yes, he does. Yes,
amazing.
He does. Yeah, that. So he plays that solo. Yeah, off my favorite. Yeah, he plays that when she's on stage performing. That's him also filling in her sort of her air bassoon playing. but I introduced him to everybody and said, this should be our bassoonist if we can make it happen. And he's just tremendous. It plays with, so again, another example of a player sort of making the score.
Yeah.
You know, like I think it's there is an emotionality. There's a lyricism to the way he plays that bassoon, just like there's a lyricism to Carol's hands. And the way she plays piano, it's all that. And imagine you have people of Carol's caliber, Anthony's caliber, and then you have this amazing orchestra of some of the best players, and you put everyone together. It's like, I felt very fortunate to have all these incredible players.
Did you meet Anthony because he posted an Instagram playing your music and you said, I'm calling this guy next? How did you know Anthony's talent? And
Anthony, my cellist that I use on, that I used, I have to use the D at the end of it, sadly, on This Is Us, because we're done with that show. Ginger Murphy played cello on that score. And I called Ginger one day and said, "Do you know a great bassoonist?" And she was like, "Oh, yes, do I?" And
oh,
so
amazing.
She made the connection.
Well, great. So Sid, you mentioned that season one, but there's maybe also something in the construction of the first episodes, at least, of season two that are already out.
Yeah.
And for those who haven't watched yet, don't let us spoil it. Pause this or skip ahead a couple minutes. But can you give us some insight into that?
I don't have any sort of clues in season two or clues that I know of yet, you know, and but the approach to the score in season two is vastly different. You know, in season one, we had to sort of contend with pandemic issues. So that very first episode, we recorded 40 musicians remotely and got 40 separate tracks and put them all together. And that was a challenge in of itself. I mean, I think so. If you listen to the score from episode one and two, that's remote recording. After that, we started getting into the room and putting together smaller groups, quartets that I would then stack to make it a little bigger. Actually, interestingly enough, in season one, if you listen to some of the raw tracks in places, I have to find where they are, but like, I would get violinists from New York, and I could, and in the recordings, you would hear an ambulance going by.
Oh, yeah.
So it all added to the sort of walla and the sound of New York too. It was, you know, it was kind of all very fitting. But this season we're recording, the musicians live in a room together we've been recording at Capitol, at the legendary Capitol Studios.
Fabulous.
And it sounds great there. We also recorded at the Village. And so it's just, we've been really fortunate to finally get everyone in the room together. Obviously you have to go through so much testing, et cetera, to make it happen, but nothing beats having players live in the room playing together. Frank.
Oh, it's so nice. Do producers come down to the dates, I hope, or do they just let you do it?
One editor came one time, and generally, you know, producers just let us do it. And then on the final episodes, John likes to come. So season one, episode 10, the finale, which was a big score episode from last season, John came to the recording. But that, at that point, we were just doing a wind quartet and a string quartet on top of MIDI, basically, at that point. This season, it's all much bigger. You'll hear it sounds bigger. Carol, can you hear the difference? Carol, I'm just wondering, can you hear the difference in terms of the orchestra this season? Maybe it's just me, but I don't know if you
hear it.
I hear it
in opening of season two, episode two. Like the
over. You mean over vantage.
And I was like, wow, that's, yeah.
So lovely.
So, Sid, you're then done with season two. All of the music for that. How long have you been done with all of that? Because sometimes I know it's a real quick turnaround, and sometimes you wait 6 months.
Just a couple weeks.
Okay, so it's pretty fresh still.
Yeah, we just finished at the I think 2 weeks ago, two or 3 weeks ago, we finished episode 10 for season two, and then they dropped the show right afterwards.
So because we've only seen the first half of the season so far, I've only seen three of the episodes so far, but it is. I wanted to ask about this because there's kind of, we're in a very, an age where a lot of TV viewers are very aware of kind of the irony and the kind of, you know, ironic moments of callbacks to season one, and it's referenced very directly in, you know, season of certain things. So, it of course makes sense as a comedy here. So there's a lot of kind of two of the podcast that they're doing and, you know, the sequel being not as good, or who knows, or, you know, like there's a lot of those kind of like self-aware moments. Is that something you're aware of when you're writing the music for this, that you can kind of, you know, play a little bit to some of those, you know, I guess they're jokes of a sort. They're not necessarily haha jokes, but they're very self-aware.
The meta jokes, basically, right? It's like, it's interesting. The you know, on a show like this, I it's oddly in a comedy, I stay away from the comedy completely. And then, so I'm always avoiding scoring anything that's going to make you laugh or to push you in a direction that's going to make you laugh. If anything, I'm scoring the emotional beats of the show. I think in terms of those moments that are meta, you know, where like Steve or Marty are talking and you know, about how, a second season of a podcast is, I don't know, there's a line about like how second seasons are always tough to match up to the first season. So they're talking about their podcast, but the showrunner, John, is really talking about how can we actually, you know, meet the demands of season two after putting together such a great season one. So those moments you just leave dry oftentimes and let them just, you know, live. I mean, you have Steve Martin and Martin Short and Selena Gomez, but those other two first, you have these comedic legends, and they don't need any support ever in anything they do. So I focus on the dramatic. That's why we had this conversation early on too, what the music's role is going to be. And I remember in some of the early pieces I sent in, one of the producers was like, you're scoring this like it's a prestige drama. And I was like, it is. So I was like, this is about loneliness, you know, and it's about these people in this building who are sort of islands on, you know, individual little islands in this building. And yeah, there's a lot of humor. There's comedy. The podcast is funny. There's also a murder that happens, but it's about the way that they escape that loneliness ultimately. And so that's the, you know, score.
I think this would be an opportunity for me to inject something that's truly a non sequitur, but incredibly essential for my own obit. I have been in the Ansonia, which is the Arconia, and had a friend that grew up there and know the building. And when I first saw murders in this building, I thought, I know that building so well. Have you ever been there, Sid?
I have not been there, but
Do you go to New York in the next year that you could walk up and past it and into that courtyard?
Yes, I'm going to be there in August. I'm going to be there next month, so I have to make a visit for sure. But yeah, it's interesting you say that too, Robert, because like when we were thinking of what the sound of the show was, I mean, look, the initial pieces I sent in before any orchestra was that stuff, right? It was these little piano noodles. And when I pitched producers on the fact that we needed to have this be a much larger orchestral score, because, you know, the main title theme, with that sound, can't score an entire show. The theme can score it, but that plinky piano over and it'll get me too much. And so I sort of like early on was like, can we get an orchestra on this? And my pitch was that I wanted the sound of the show to also sound like, look, this is a pre-war building. Okay. I had done some research on pre-war buildings when I first got the gig, just to put myself in that headspace. At one point, I was looking at like the sound of elevator bells. My buddy Nate Barr, who's an incredible composer.
Yeah.
I called Nate I consulted Nate. I said, hey, I want to make some sounds out of the elevator bells. And he goes, oh, that's that's an Otis bell. I was like, what do you mean an Otis bell?
He said,
those are Otis elevators that used to be in those pre-war buildings. And I started making sounds out of those bells and parts out of it. Didn't end up using any of it, but it allowed me to start thinking of the Arconia in a different way. And ultimately, the orchestra to me is what it sounds like inside or between the walls of the Arconia, you know? And because the producers wanted the sound of the show to feel classic but modern, you know, that was sort of the general idea. And so,
amazing.
Yeah.
You got to check it out. It's a wonderful building. I
want to ask one more thing about podcasts, because this is something I came across just this morning, and I pulled up an interview that you did with, I think, some NPR station of some kind. And you mentioned at the time that they were asking you about podcasts, and you said, well, I wasn't that familiar with kind of the format of podcasts for season one. And then you went into, you mentioned To Live and Die in LA, which I actually have a podcast project with the producer of that I'm working on right now. But that was one that you mentioned and said, like, that then I kind of got a little bit hooked on a little bit of the podcast stuff. I was curious because so much of that kind of true crime format is like has these elements of like a very calm approach to something bone chilling, you know, like it's there's heavy drama involved here, but it's delivered in kind of a very methodical way. And I thought, like, in a way, that's kind of what the music is doing in a lot of this, because it's very and maybe that I guess for season one, it was just kind of purely coincidental, or you found the same kind of beat. Having listened to some podcasts now, did you identify anything in between the seasons else that you thought, like, oh, that fits well in season two?
I thought that it's a great question. And, you know, part of season one also was writing the music for inside the podcast that happens. So there's Tina Fey's podcast, All Is Not Okay, in Oklahoma. And the hardest piece of music I had to write was her podcast theme that is never really, or at that point, was never really part of the score per se. It almost felt like it was like lo-fi, and it was this bong, dong, 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 dong. And I actually used my Mellotron and used the rock guitar patch on it. And just played bong dong ding da dong 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 da da dong 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 dong, and it was this stupid little piece, frankly, with bongos going and it was like, and it sounded like very basic neutral NPR music, you know. It was like the idea, and that was the hardest piece of music I had to write all season. It was trying to write something that was neutral, that wasn't doing too much, and that was doing just enough to sort of like be wallpaper, you know. But like, and so, you know, in that sense, like, and I would sometimes, like, I would just, as I was writing it, I was like, I have to feel like I'm inside, like a, you know, a Pete's, you know, sweaty balls piece from, like, you know, from like SNL or something. You remember that, like, sketch? Like, it's and so that, just so, and this is bringing me to answer another question that you asked earlier. You know, there are some, you know, there are some clues in season two that that emanate from some of my early podcast themes.
Amazing. All right.
Yes.
Well, we're looking forward to that. And congratulations, by the way, on the Emmy nominations. This show just completely, I mean, so crushed many it. Nominations, but so many of those are for your music.
Crazy.
And it's really a special show to watch. I can't recommend it enough. I think I have everyone in my family who's now watching this thing. and they're like, everybody. Man, this is so fun. So
I'm so glad that you like it. No, it's crazy. I mean, it's, again, it's just like, it's the sum of just like really good, talented people working together, frankly.
Anything you can share about what's coming up, or are you taking the next year off to
visit New York
at Redwood Trees and visit New York?
If I take a year off, like, I'm afraid I'll never work again. So that's not happening.
That's interesting. That's a different podcast and a different conversation, because I know two composers who took a year off at the height of their career, and you know both of them, and it didn't really last.
You mean the break didn't last?
Yeah.
Or the, well, or the career didn't
Ridley
last?
Ridley Scott calls you 3 months into your sabbatical and says, dude, I just need you, I need you to fix the score. I need you back in L.A. Like, can you come tonight or tomorrow? And you're chilling in the highlands of Scotland, and it's, well,
I will say there's a, you know, you come off of, I just finished 6 seasons of This Is Us. We just finished 2nd season of Only Murders. I have new shows that I'm working on that I'm excited about. And one of them is Welcome to Chippendales. It's the, it's the Chippendales story for Hulu. It's an incredible story. And there's a podcast about it, and it's an incredible dramatic story about what happens to the guy that came from India to start Chippendales. It's a tragic story, and horrific. And so that's a, there's, you know, there's murder there.
it has to be.
But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there's a bittersweetness in terms of like how I'm feeling right now. I'm sad that This Is Us is over. I'm sad that season two of Murders is over, but we have another season, which season three we were just ordered. So, you know, it's just, it's, I would love to take a break. And then every time I try to, I can't.
Hollywood's memory is about 45 minutes. You know, all they need to hear is, yeah, I think Siddhartha's really sort of, plus you're, you know, he's taken about a year, I think, to, and your agent's always really loving when they have to answer. He's not a villain. I know it too well. People desperate to get into your chair, and then they find that in your chair you can get sad, burnt out. But boy, it's a rocky road. It's really interesting to me too. You mentioned Succession. I don't know why, as you can imagine, I listen to a lot of material, and I. Both themes, when I first heard them, I thought, oh, I'm not so sure. And like the third time I heard them, I thought, I love this more than I've ever loved anything. And I don't know why. It's something that both times I heard, yeah, I guess. And the third time I heard it, I thought.
We waited till the end of the interview to.
I'm in love with this, and now I just live for it. Same with the Succession theme. First time I heard it, I thought, oh,
I've said several times to Kenny that the melodies that you're writing on a lot of these on both This Is Us, but really I think they stand out on Only Murders are just so much fun. Like, and they're beefy enough that you can really kind of like enjoy the ride too. You know, like it's not just a little.
Well, they're also
a motif.
Earwigs enough that I can't live without that kind of. I was on a bike ride on Sunday, and it was like, I really felt it.
Yeah, but I think it's just a matter of, and that comes just, that's, you know, that comes from my band world and my band experience and writing songs. And I think I grew up in a band and if there was one thing that I know that I do well, as a composer that I'm most confident with, it's my melody writing. And so I think that's, you know, I always think about the hook. Always. It's just the way I think about it. And then when you can actually incorporate it into a score and when you have the confidence of producers around you that are like, let's use it.
Yeah,
let's not shy away from it. Go, use it over and over again. It's a very filmic approach to scoring.
I was thinking that,
you know, and I think that's also too. We're in an age of television, now it's old news to talk about, but it's like there's elevated music everywhere. I mean, I am listening to other people's scores, and I'm like, holy crap, that's amazing, you know. And so I'm finding a lot more good scores than I am not good scores these days, you know. And I think we're all feeding into each other. We're all sort of like upping the game. Like everyone is like, oh. Nick just did that. Okay. I got to do this. And like, you know, and, there's lots of wonderful scores out there. Ones that I'm nominated against too, that I'm just like, those are incredible scores.
Nate, do you have your speech ready?
Oh, good God. No,
I hope so.
It's funny. Dan Fogelman, when he, Dan Fogelman, who created This Is Us, right. And work as a producer here, he and I have done a bunch of panels together. Dan and I went to college together. And so we've known each other forever. And we were in a panel once, and he introduced me as an Emmy losing composer. And it's my favorite thing. And it's just like, so yeah. So I'm an Emmy losing composer.
I love that.
Isn't that great? And so so that's sort of my current claim to fame. But so no, I'm not preparing any speech. I'm an outside shot. So, but I would. I'm happy to.
You might have a better shot than you think, but yeah, it's going to be.
Yeah, I think so too.
Someday that'll be Emmy winning for sure. So,
yeah.
Thank you, Sid. This was a real treat for us, and really enjoying all of your work that you do. The way you communicate the music, even just the keyboard that you have there to demonstrate some of these, it's such a blast. And I know our listeners love it
really
as well.
Rich.
So. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Sid.
You're so welcome. And thank you, guys. And thank you, Carol, as well.
Yeah, super cool.
Thank you very much. So,
of course.
We'll see you on the Chippendale show.
See you soon, guys. Okay.